It's time once again for another episode of the Shop Notes Podcast. Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Phil Huber, joined today by Logan and John. Today is episode number 193. Thanks for joining us, and also for all the people who subscribe to Woodsmith, Shop Notes, and popular woodworking magazines, and our online products as well. It's what those things do that allow us to be able to do the podcast like this and to be able to entertain and inspire more woodworkers. Also want to thank our sponsor for today's episode. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Titebond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Titebond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit tightbond.com. All right. As is my hope for these, is to respond to listener comments and questions on here. So we have a few from the last episode. New Mexico Dan says, "I love you young guys. I have lots of tools from my dad that my dad had bought around 1950. A Craftsman metal lathe, a drill press, and an electric hacksaw. All are complete, and the lathe has all the accessories it came with. I use them all. The electric motor on the drill press dates back to around 1920. My dad took excellent care of everything. He also engraved his name on his tools, and later my name too. What I find funny, one time you guys mentioned that you didn't sharpen drill bits, but replace them every year or so. My dad had a drill stand that I use and sharpen the bits using his drill bit grinder and replace as necessary. The stand may date back to the 20s as well. I have lots of small tools from him, too, that I use in my metal shop and garage and then in my wood shop." So, first of all, I think it's funny that he thinks that we replace them every year or so.
Yeah. I did get from Norman when I picked up all this equipment, I did get a drill grinding attachment. For a brand new in the box, never used, which I think works well for like standard
twist bits, right?
Twist bits, like especially doing metal and stuff. Can't do brad points real well on it. They're not brad points for real long.
Yeah. Do you guys ever try to sharpen Forstner bits at all, or maybe just tone them up a little?
I have.
Not too bad, but.
It's not really, and some of it has to do with practice. Because in spite of being able to look at, I mean, I've written a couple of articles on sharpening Forstner bits and also looked through a bunch of our sharpening books that we have in our library here. It seems easy, but it's one of those things that is really challenging to actually see whether how you're going on it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I have found that there was a couple of projects. I don't remember what I was doing. There's a couple of projects where I did. I grabbed, it was in the shop there, and I grabbed a Forstner bit. I'm like, this thing looks like it drilled, you know, holes for plumbing and concrete. So I ended up, sharpening it, and I feel like it's easier now. I prefer not to use them. I'm not gonna open the box. I have Forstner bits sitting next to me. I prefer the bits that don't have the sawtooth edge, so like
the continuous rim bits.
Yeah I like those better, but I think the sawtooth edges are easier to sharpen, because then it's just kind of like filing saw teeth, and every time I've sharpened them, I've just sharpened them with a like little mill file, you know. A drill bit doesn't have to be a razor blade. So I've found that sharpening with a little file seems to do well enough for what I'm doing. You know, if I need a good clean hole, I'm using a brad point bit. If I need it to be super clean and it has to be a Forstner bit radius, there's other ways that I'll get that hole cleaner, you know what I mean, than just the Forstner bit. So
I'm mostly surprised being able to watch this as we record it, that John kept a straight face as Logan says, "When I need a good clean hole."
Yeah, I was thinking it in my head, but my face.
Personal growth.
It's called maturity.
And I think I realize what Nate is going to title this episode now.
Yep.
Just saying. So yeah, no, I would, you know, like for a while, you know, remember when the drill doctor came out? Like it was, we had a bunch of those around here for a while, and I'm not even sure exactly what happened to them, but
yeah.
I don't know that I was ever shown how to sharpen a twist bit. Because we have a bunch of twist bits that we put back in the hopefully it will resharpen itself drawer.
Yep.
But I wouldn't even know what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things, like, I know the old school guys will be like, I just sharpen them by hand on the grinder. And, like, that's cool. I can't do that. I've tried it, and, like, do they cut better? Maybe. They cut.
Because I know for a long time, some grinders on one of the tool rests had like a little angled slot that was supposedly for that very purpose. But to me, that was always on the same side of the grinder that nasty, those junky wheels were on.
Yeah.
You know, the like the 28 grit. Ones, yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, just
I think standard woodworking bits are cheap enough that I don't worry about sharpening them. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If I'm using like an 1/8-inch pilot bit, you know, you can buy 100 of them for $15, you know, and they're serviceable. But like, I think when you start looking at, you know, some of the bits I have laying over here are like 1.5-inch twist bits with a Morse taper on the end. Like, a $200 bit. Like, that is one that you probably want to sharpen.
Right. So. Yeah. I can see that.
Yep.
Yeah. Puppy Doc writes, I was just rewatching for the third time. I may not be considered normal. And I had totally missed Phil's reference to Spaceballs. And this is truly my favorite Mel Brooks movie. Really made me chuckle. That was in reference to Logan's extremely long infill plane mock-up that he needs to true up on his new mill.
Yep. Yeah, you got to go back and rewatch the podcast to get all of the Easter eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Several times. We do. Several times. Yep.
John, for legal purposes, that was a joke.
Yeah.
you're not supposed to watch them more than once.
Yeah. Maybe not even once.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't watch them.
Who knows? He's got another question on here. Another great episode, guys. Thanks for keeping us entertained and educated, of course. Question and maybe a topic for discussion. I'm building a new workbench inspired by Dylan's workbench top. I'm using sanded plywood, cheaper than Baltic birch, and almost just as visually appealing, with strips of walnut mixed in for color and style. A bench should look good, right? Yep. Isn't that part of the functionality? Oh, and some ash added in just because I know how much Logan loves ash. Anyway, the question, I'm installing a side vise and I am left-handed. I do a few things right-handed. Which side end do I install the vise on and why? Additional question, end vise or a side vise or both? Okay, so first part of that question is a bench should look good, right? And the answer, I think, is yes.
Yeah. 100%. Benches and tools should look good. It makes you do better work. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to back that up other than my own personal convincing of myself that that's why I buy good-looking tools.
It looks good, you feel good, and then you work good.
Yep.
Work good.
Or at least gooder.
Well,
yeah. So, and yes, I believe, as we've been talking about here, that is part of the functionality, is how it looks, because it's, you know, at certain types of woodworkers have a feeling about their workshops as being somewhat of a special or almost sacred kind of space, that it's just nice to be able to be in there. And the more you enjoy that space, you know, human beings are pretty visual. So if it's visually appealing, you're going to want to spend time there.
As the resident left-hander, Phil, what about his left-handed question?
Which I can share some of his concerns, because I'm left-handed, but, you know, like I bat and golf right-handed. So that's just how it felt natural to do stuff. So that being said, I ended up putting my face vise, who I think what he's calling a side vise. Mm-hmm. I put a face vise on the right-hand side of my workbench, because for several reasons. One, the main one being that if I'm going to do any work in the vise and I have a piece in there clamped and I'm hand planing it or whatever, having it over on that right-hand side, that's like the direction into the plane, or, you know, that I'm planing into. Mm-hmm. So it works out really well for me. Even when I end up doing stuff right-handed, I can still turn around and use the vise the same way. I do not have an end vise on my bench, as I've found one that a style that I liked. I tried doing an end, you know, like a face vise on the end, but when you tighten it, that jaw ends up wanting to like kind of tip up a little bit. So then your workpiece sits up. So it's like you tighten it and then smack the piece down. And that just never really flew. Yeah.
I feel like the face vise doesn't matter as much whether you're left or right handed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I can agree with that.
The force is always to the side, you know, whatever, that's fine. The end vise, I think, makes a difference. I think as a left-handed person, well, maybe not. See, I would think as a right-handed person, I like my tail vise on the right-hand side of the bench, because then if I need to, I can get around the end of the bench and plane straight away from me. I would think the same would hold true if you're left-handed, but because I'm right in this world, I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it probably doesn't matter, and you could probably make it work. Now, if you were putting like a bench hook on the front of the, what do they call them, like a planing crook or whatever, on the front edge of your bench to hold the end of a board, then it would matter. I think you could probably work with it either way, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the benches here at Woodsmith are set up, quote unquote, for right-handed people. And I work with them pretty effectively. I think, Puppy Doc, the big thing for you is like, what is the kind of work that you're doing? Like, are you doing more hand tool stuff, like hand planing? Because if you're just using bench planes, in essence, it really doesn't matter. I end up using a lot of stops, you know, whether it's bench dogs or whatever, so that the piece is braced against the stop. And with a bench plane, they're essentially ambidextrous. If you're going to start getting into joinery planes and stuff like that, they're usually handed. And then so then you want to kind of consider, I mean, you're going to, for the most part, especially if you're using vintage tools, they're all going to be right-handed molding planes or plow planes or something like that. So you're going to be planing the other direction.
That's a very good point that I didn't think about, Phil, is if you're using any hand plane with a fence, almost always that fence is going to be on the left-hand side of the plane for right-handed use.
Yeah.
And in that instance, you would want the workpiece hanging off the front edge of the bench so that fence can drop below it.
Right.
That's a valid point. Knowing Bob's planes that he has and the ones that we kind of messed with when he was here. I'm guessing he's doing more bench plane work versus joinery plane work. You know, I don't know that Bob has any like joinery, like a plow plane or a rabbit plane or a data plane or any of that stuff. So, you know, it might be a moot point.
Yeah.
But that is something to think about. You know, if you start, you know, especially after we tuned up one of his planes, he's like, holy crap, this is really fun. It's like, yeah, at that point you might want to plan for the future. So,
yeah. On the opposite end of my bench, so the left-hand end, instead of an end vise, I have a tall bolt-on auxiliary vise that I use for carving or small detail work, so that it's raised up off my bench surface, probably, I don't know, almost 10 inches or something like that. And that I found really handy. I mean, if I need to, I can take it off for long pieces or wide parts or whatever, but for the most part, it just lives there. But I think the like edge grain plywood bench top, that's a solid bench top.
Yeah.
And works.
Yep.
John, you have any bench thoughts, workbench thoughts?
No, I mean, you guys kind of hit it all there. I kind of take, like you said, that all of our workbenches are set up for right-handed use, so I kind of take it for granted of like where the vices are. So I'm sitting here thinking, it was like, on my bench, where's the vice and how do I use it? But yeah, the vice is on the left side, and I always use it. As I'm facing the bench, I'm usually working from my right to left. So yeah, the vice is on the left, and so that's normal people. That's how we work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our benches are actually taller than you sometimes see. Mm-hmm. And when I built my first bench, I built it shorter, A, because I'm the short one. Yes, and B, because that's what people told you, is that if you were going to do stuff that you needed a shorter bench, especially for handwork. And I don't know that I agree with that. Because again, I've worked with taller workbenches here for so long that they're pretty normal feeling. And there are some operations where I actually feel like having a taller bench is helpful. So if Bob, if you have a biscuit joiner or are going to do some stuff on your bench with a handheld router, you know, having it a little taller is going to be overall more comfortable than like constantly hunching over.
Yeah.
See, I will disagree with you. I think for standard hand tool use, I prefer a lower bench. 100%. I feel like all of ours are, you know, like chest height to me, because I'm not that much taller than you, Phil. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I'm not that much taller than you. And you got Chris Fitch, who is taller than any of us.
Yeah.
And he's designed a lot of these benches, and they are much taller.
Right.
Like his, you know, his shaker cabinet bench is chest height to me in his office. it's perfect height for him. But what I find, and I'm becoming more conscious of this as I'm saying this tongue in cheek, as I get older, I'm becoming more conscious of this because my like golfer's elbow and tendonitis really start to bother me if I start doing stuff in an uncomfortable position. And I was doing dominoes on this miter saw station a couple of weeks ago. And I don't remember if I told you guys this or not, but I was holding a work piece down and then dominoing it. And man, my shoulder was bothering me.
Yeah.
And I was doing that on one of our rolling carts that I got from the studio. And then I moved over to my bench where it was much lower. So instead of having my shoulder up, I was much lower, and it just felt better on everything I was doing.
Okay.
You know, from an elbow standpoint, from a shoulder standpoint. With that said, there are some instances, you're right, that I think having a bench a little bit higher is nicer. But I will, when I rebuild this bench, I have all the lumber for it. I just need to finish this miter saw station first. I'm going the same height as this, because it is a fairly low bench. I want to say it's like 30 inches So it's fairly low. Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, when I was designing that workbench for Shop Notes recently, I was surprised how much looking at stuff we had designed in the past and then what we had in the video studio, photo studio, the shop, how much variation between the benches, you know, that people use are, because some of them are lower, some of them are higher. And I always have kind of maybe leaned to like a countertop height bench where it's like 36 inches or taller, you know, then it kind of depends on your height. But I'd say, yeah, with like as Logan mentioned, with hand tool work, I think that the lower might be better because I think the motion across the bench, you're pushing downwards and also across. So the lower it is, the more like, you know, body weight, gravity that is assisting you as well, rather than just being higher and you're all kind of shoulders and upper body. So yeah, it depends how, I guess, how tall you are and what you're doing on the bench. But yeah. So don't skip leg day. That's all I know.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is some concessions to be made for if you are designing your bench at a particular height for a particular reason. Like if your workbench is designed to be an outfeed table too at your table saw, okay, do it whatever height that needs to be. But for, you know, a lot of us that have our bench separate from everything else, you know, personally, I prefer the lower bench. So,
okay. I'll in the show notes page, I'll go around and take some photos and measure some of the heights of the benches around here. Just and to then
measure the people.
Measure the people. Yeah.
Like Mark, stand still. I got to measure you.
Yeah. Cause when I mean, Bob's referencing Dylan's plywood workbench. That one is lower than the other ones around here.
It is. Yep.
And he had earlier, instead of that bench, Dylan had a Roubaix style bench that he had built, and that one was low as well. So,
So for the listeners, for us to get all of the data together and make charts, we need everybody's preferred bench height and their inseam. We'll graph them, see how it works out.
No photos of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it would be hilarious.
Little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Tightbond. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Tightbond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Tightbond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit tightbond.com.
All right, so I have a what is it?
Okay.
Are we done with listener comments?
That was it for listener comments for that one. So
okay, I have a what is it, and I know I know it's a milling tool.
All right,
and I know what it's intended to do, but I don't know why you would use it. So I know there are people that listen that are familiar with machinists, tools, and machine shops. So I have this guy. Okay. So I'm showing it to everybody that is watching, and it is a bit holder, I believe, for a drill bit. I believe it's for a drill bit. My buddy Norman held on to this. I said, hey, does this go or does this stay? Because I was at this point, I'm trying to get stuff to stay with him because I had so much crap already. And he's like, oh, you know, he's like, I got this in case I needed to drill really centered holes. And he's like, oh, just throw it in. So I threw it in. Okay. And it is a Criterion. Okay. The name is on there. Criterion. 3/4 inch, 7/8 20 thread. I believe, okay, now there is a dovetailed way here. Clamps down. And there's an adjustment screw right there. So this entire thing will slide left and right or up and down. It will slide when you adjust it. Now, I'm imagining this going in the milling machine right here as a tool holder. That milling head spins.
Right.
Why would you ever off-center that?
You just make it bigger. Make bigger holes.
But, like, would that be bad, wouldn't it? Like,
I would think so.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, like, they make these still, but I can't find a good description on what it is used for. Mm-hmm. And I kind of get a feeling it was pretty expensive, just looking at that Criterion still makes tools. It says Criterion Beverly Hills. But, like, I can't imagine why you would offset the bit holder from the point of rotation in the collet, right? That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe it's like the paddle attachment on your KitchenAid, is that you want it offset so that it mixes all the way around, like to be able to get to the,
what it is.
Get to the edge of the bowl.
You need that cam action.
Yeah
Yeah, because that's exactly what this would be. I just don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
See, in my grandpa's shop, if I would have picked something up like that and asked what it was, he would be like, "Oh, that's a lever right." I'm like, "A lever right?" He's like, "Yeah, just leave it right where you found it."
Yep.
That's all I know.
Yeah. Maybe for like putting a fly cutter in. Because those fly cutters oscillate anyways. Not really oscillate, but they spin not centered. I don't know. I know somebody knows what this is for. So I will be watching next week. Well, not next week. This will drop, next Friday?
Yeah.
We're a week ahead. 2 weeks. I'll be watching the comments to see what people tell me this stupid thing is, because I don't have an idea. I have no clue.
Okay.
I don't even have a good guess.
The funny thing is, when this goes live, it'll be this Friday to the viewers. So they'll be like, wait, what is today? Is this Friday or next Friday?
Yeah.
Speaking of space balls, that would be like a, is that a now? No, that was then. Yeah. This is now. When will it be? Soon.
Yeah. See, MSC Direct tells me that this is a manual offset boring head.
Of course.
That doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah.
For $862.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't give me I need a YouTube video on how to use this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
See, I only use automatic offset boring heads.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the manual ones are hard.
I never use a manual. So you got the clutch on there and
mm-hmm. Yep.
Just too hard.
So I wonder if this isn't actually for, it's not Morse tapered though. I was going to say, I wonder if this is for use in like a mill or a lathe.
Okay.
In like the tailstock, and then you'd offset the cutter because a boring cutter is like a hook that cuts on the push.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to wait for everybody to tell me what it is.
Yeah.
Bring it
on. Don't chuck it up just yet.
Yeah.
Nope.
Or do. Although,
we've had some good videos where it's like, oh yeah, I know how this works. Then you're like in the middle of the video, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Going back to the last podcast, if Tubal Cain is actually watching our podcast and you have one of these, bring it on, because Logan needs some help here.
Yep. Logan needs a lot of help.
We can do a collaboration video where you come and help set up Logan's mill, Mr. Pete.
Oh, so there we go.
We will film it. So there you go. Okay, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I bet you going through the tubs that you got from him are full of many wondrous surprises and treasures.
Oh, you have. I mean, I guess you have some kind of idea because you did kind of go through them.
Yeah,
but I did dig through. Yeah, those. It's like, wow, I don't know what this is. Like, this is so cool. I wonder what it does.
I think that's part of the delight of seeing machinist and metalworking tools like that. Because you had one of the bins had all kinds of mills and bits and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of them, especially the vintage ones, which is clearly Norman's era. are have these very preciously made cardboard two-part sleeves and holders and all of this kind of stuff. And it was just like, these are really very special things and you need to treat them well.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like this one. This was in, I got a tub that's basically full of end mills. And then I got this tub that's just full of like the parallels and stuff like that. This was in there. Yeah. It's a pill container, as everybody holds their end mills in. But then it's like, you know, you got the cool little cardboard sleeves. Or it's like, oh, look at that cute little bit that's in there, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's nice looking. Like, it feels sharp.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But then you got these ones. And some of these actually have labels on them, which I'm thankful for. Because I don't know what the hell they are. This one is a SL... 4NF, it's a non-ferrous burr cutter, so for aluminum and stuff. But look at the freaking, oh god, it's stuck. Look at the, I mean, it's like tapered.
Oh, that's cool.
So some of this stuff, I'm thinking, okay, well, and this cuts in the clockwise direction. Some of this stuff, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, this is designed for an end mill, for the milling machine. I got a Fordham that will spin these things really nicely for power carving. Like, right? Why not?
I don't know. Maybe. I just know that from talking with Chris on different things, the cool part about various metalworking end mills is that they'll change angles and whatever on it to suit whatever the material is that it's.
Yes.
You know, because you can have kind of your all-purpose ones, but like aluminum cutting end mills have a different helix angle or whatever it's called on there.
Well, so. And that's where I feel like I have a lot to learn about this type of stuff, because you're absolutely right. Some of the stuff is designed for aluminum. Some of it's designed for brass. Some of it's designed for steel. And it's like you can... Changing one little thing like that, you know, like the helix angle or the angle of the cutter, you know, apart from the helix, will change the surface finish you get drastically. So, yeah, some of it, I don't know, it's just gonna be, there's gonna be, I foresee lots of broken bits and lots of changed pants in my future. So.
Everybody just know that at 20 or at 32, like 42, Phil nearly did a coffee spit take.
I was hoping
so
that
was. That was...
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So. All right.
These look like these would make great mortises, though. I had a lot of comments on, I think Colin put a photo on the Popwood page of the vertical mill. And he's like, does anybody know what this is? And had a guy saying, what are you going to use a vertical mill in a woodworking shop for? Like full depth mortises in one pass. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
So. Yeah. Which we talked about in another podcast. And I think there are, not everybody has space for it or the inclination. Totally get that. But I think there are endless uses that you could make for it if you have it in your shop.
Well, and when this podcast drops, we will be at Grizzly. Well, I will actually be on the way home from Grizzly. We're flying out there. I'm flying out there tomorrow. You guys are flying out on Monday to film some stuff at their headquarters in Washington. The owner, Shiraz Baloli, who we've had on the podcast, he is I want to say he's an avid user, but he definitely uses his mill in woodworking, you know, for doing inlays and stuff. So it will be very interesting to see how he uses it, because I think he said on the podcast, he's like, I'm not a traditional woodworker because I use stuff that's not supposed to be used for wood. But like, it's not supposed to be used for wood, or that's just not how
typically
people use
isn't
it.
Used for
wood. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason you couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've talked before about my interest in watching Adam Savage's Tested channel.
Yeah.
And he has a big Bridgeport. I guess he got it replaced now, but he's got a big vertical mill and he uses it on all kinds of stuff with making wood projects. So,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
Yeah. So I'll be interested. It'll be fun to go to the Northwest. You know, I'm a tree nerd, so I'm probably going to be like trying to gawk at trees as we're driving and stuff, because you get into like the big cedar territory up there and the big firs. And
yeah.
How much luggage are we bringing and how much wood can I stuff in people's bags? Let's shove turning planks wherever they fit.
Yep. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, because it's we're going to be basically right across the sound from the rainforest there. So,
yeah.
Yep. They won't miss a few trees, right?
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, it'll be really cool to see. You'll just have to all wait for our report when we come back. So,
yeah.
Speaking of miter saw station, how's that coming?
So I've been working on drawers. I feel like I've been saying that for several days now, because there's a lot of freaking drawers in this stupid thing. Like, I don't know whose great idea it was. I have all the drawers done for the left-hand side. So two base cabinets. Left-hand side has four drawers, two that are 36 inches wide, more or less, 33 inches wide. Top one is going to be for all my router bits. So I ordered a bunch of, it's not Kaizen foam, but it's similar to Kaizen foam. It's the, I think, PowerTech brand, just foam inserts that are die cut with holes in them for router bit shanks. Oh, so instead of doing the whole shop made thing, you know, stand there drilling holes for 40 minutes, I just ordered foam. I'm going to glue those into the drawer. So that's the top drawer. Bottom drawer is same, 33 inches wide, but that's more like a pots and pans type pullout that you'd have in a kitchen. And that holds a lot of the Festool sustainers. And then my thought was, so that's the wider section. There's a narrow section in the on the right-hand side of that left-hand unit. And I was going to do shelves in there. However, I started thinking about it. And the way I built these frames, that left-hand side of that one cubby doesn't have a panel in that frame. So I'm like, okay, stuff could kind of drop down into those shelves, and that would be kind of a pain in the butt. It's like, you know, if I'm going to, I mean, might as well just make those pullouts as well. You know, pullouts for power tools.
Yeah.
So I have the left-hand unit has four drawers. The right-hand unit's going to have six drawers in it. So, you know, it's a lot of drawer making. They're all the same size, so it's like just rip a bunch of strips, cut them to length, and just do the joinery. Everything's tongue and dado joinery. They'll all have false fronts on them. So I'm getting close to finishing the drawers out. I'm going to need one more drawer slide, I think. But then we're on to painting. And I had planned on painting this week, but it was so like windy and dreary, and I don't like brushing paint. Let me rephrase that. I like brushing that linseed paint that we talked about a couple months ago on the podcast. That stuff's nice to brush out, but I don't want to paint that entire thing. That's a lot of surface area to paint with a brush. So I want to spray it. And I have primer for it. I don't have the top coat yet, but I have primer. My thought was to do that this week, but it was so windy. It was pretty cold and rainy and stuff, so I didn't get outside to do that. So that will hopefully be the following week after we get back from Washington. I'll get that done. This is for a couple issues down the road, so I'm not in any rush to get it done other than I just want the parts out of my way, which is my whole rush to get it done. But yeah, it's coming along nicely. It is very nice, and I feel like we've talked about this before. I'm not in a rush to build this thing because I'm not up against, this is a magazine issue out at least. So I'm not up against a print deadline. I'm not up against a video crew sitting there on their phones while I'm working on parts, you know, because doing all of that, like that type of stuff, kind of, it's, you know, kind of a kick to the shorts because as a woodworker, because you're rushing through where you wouldn't usually rush. So building this at like a normal pace is actually really refreshing. Like, I'm still taking photos, you know, obviously I'm still building this for the magazine, but I'm not up against a deadline necessarily. So I'm actually able to take my time. I'm using corner clamps for every one of the drawers. Everything's square. It's very weird. Like, it's just, it's like, oh, this is how you're supposed to build woodworking projects. This is how everybody builds them. Like, I hate camera woodworking.
No, I can agree with that. There's some things that it's just, you notice a change of pace when you're doing stuff. Like, if I'm doing props for a TV show episode or a video, when the people are here and then in between to get stuff done, I can go at a spread it out much where I'm not slower. Feeling like I'm wasting somebody's time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we still have other stuff we have to do for our work.
Yeah.
So I still, you know, like, even on sets, like, okay, gotta get this done. You know, even if I'm just making parts and, you know, nobody's there, I still kind of get that, like, I just gotta get this done so I can go do my other stuff. This is my other stuff, you know. I mean, there's other stuff, but this is a large portion of the other stuff. So it's like, okay, slow down a little bit, you know. Yeah. And it's very pleasant now that, you know, not to beat the same dust collection horse, but now that everything's kind of sealed up and in place, like, I feel like I was kind of bitching when you were here last week, Phil, when we were filming, that overarm dust collector arm for this saw stop was kind of janky. Like, not janky, like, it's built well. It just didn't work real well.
Yeah.
But now that I have everything sealed up, it actually works really, really nicely.
Oh.
So it still gets in the way. You still can't use it. It's one of those floating over arms. So if anybody has seen the saw stop, they make three different styles of those arms.
Yeah.
They make the one that they send with every saw, which is the guard and the little foot pawls, and they have the tube on the back for like a normal vacuum.
Right.
And they make basically that style with a smaller hose that goes over the extension wing, and then they make a larger one that's a 4-inch, that's a floating style where the head kind of floats up and down. That's the one I have on this saw stop. Mm-hmm. And you can't use it for everything. It's not a, you can't use it for absolutely everything you do, but it does help significantly. I have cut a lot of stuff there, and there's just a small pile of dust. And you know, it's a wood shop. It's dusty. It is what it is. But I will say this Harvey fence that I have on my saw, the Harvey Big Eye, which, I don't know if I was telling you guys or if I was telling Colin this, that fence is my favorite upgrade I've done to any tool. I love that fence.
Okay.
The only downfall I will say about that fence is if dust gets on the hardened steel bearing guides, it will bind up. So you kind of got to keep it clean. So it's not necessarily just a, you know, aesthetic thing. The fence works much better if there's not dust packed in the bearings. So, sure. It's just been so much more pleasant to work now that everything's kind of buttoned up and we got a big dust collector in here and it's working well. So,
yeah, I think the main thing with that saw stop hood is the swing out arm. That's what always seems to be in the way. Like, when you're trying to push things through, it'd be nice if there was something that could just drop straight down from the ceiling or you know, be a higher arm, so it's not like right at eye level. Seems like maybe that's already a thing. And I don't know.
It is. I actually sold one to one of our podcast listeners a couple of years ago. I had like a, I don't know if it was an Excalibur or a Shark. I think it was maybe a Shark brand one that I had mounted to the ceiling in the basement shop. And it worked pretty well. They definitely do make them. The bigger issue that I run into with this guard is when you get the fence really close, there's not room to push stuff through. So basically you're limited to, I'd say anything under 3 inches, you have to have that up and out of the way. You know, the 3 to 5 inches, it's really hard to get a push stick next to it, but you can do it. That's the bigger thing. So, you know, overall though, it is working much better. And when I first put it on, I'm like, oh, I gave up my underwing storage, 'cause there's brackets and arms and stuff that attach to it. So I gave up my underwing storage for this. I'm like, this is dumb. I just put this on. I'm going to take it off 2 days later. Like, this is stupid. But I was like, I'm going to stick with it. And I just didn't have time to take it off. Now I'm glad I left it on. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. That'll be our audience question for the week then. Is anybody else worked with an overarm blade cover or guard thing? And how well, what was your learning curve on it? And how well do you like it if you use it regularly?
Yeah. So I was so disappointed initially that I started looking at reviews on it, and everyone's like, oh yeah, it works really well. Except if you're doing half kerf cuts. So like if you're like shaving a 16th of an inch off something, it spews dust all over. That's what everyone was saying. And that's what kind of led me to say, okay, I'm going to wait till I get all the dust collection sealed up and stuff, and then really see how it works. Right. And those are dead on, you know, like if you're making a full cut or taking at least a kerf off, it does really well. But when you are, just shaving a piece of plywood down, you're getting a little turbo jet of sawdust shooting at you. So,
yeah. Which, I mean, to be fair, you get that on basically any table saw.
Oh, you do. Like, yeah, 100%. I still believe that this setup is probably the best dust collection you'll get on a table saw. I feel like the ICS, the industrial cabinet saw, which are the two main saws we have in the shop there where Phil is, those I think are a little bit better because they have a magnetic blade cover on the inside that swings in and out of the way. So when you close that, it actually kind of concentrates the suction.
Oh, okay.
The PCS, the professional cabinet saw, which is the one I have, it does not have that. Hmm. I think there are things that I could probably do to increase it a little bit, you know, seal up some of the cracks in the base, but I'm not going to go through that right now. It's working well enough the way it is that I'm happy with it. So
yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, to the Shop Notes podcast. And a special thanks also to our sponsor for today's episode, Tight Bond. They make the glue that helps us keep our stuff together here at Woodsmith and Popular Woodworking. They have a flavor of glue that's right for you and your projects. So you want to check out their site, tightbond.com. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, you can put them in the comments section on our YouTube channel or send us an email, woodsmith@woodsmith.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.